agus Julie agus mar maigat Paul as a gwerthe le leibh an sa pigan ó caid riamh ar sa the O'Vale has become legendary thanks to Paul and I'm sure others and I'm delighted to read here and I think Paul is deserves our thanks too for giving recognition to Irish and indeed Gaelic here tonight. And delighted to meet with Meg, who's an old friend. When I put together a recent collection in Irish, I was amazed to find how many poems, in fact, originated in the Scottish Islands. And I'm going to start with one of those which was written for Meg. It's called, the original is Sciúrd Fhí Scraipadal, a quick trip into Scraipadal, which is a deserted village on the east coast of Lasse, and about which Sorley MacLean, Sorley MacLean, wrote what was probably his last significant poem, I think sometime around 1972. Hallaig he had already written about the clearances. Scraipadal was similar, but also bringing in, you know, his disquiet at the nuclear submarines he saw up and down the sand. So I went there with Meg, I don't know, a good few years ago now, and I was involved in translating MacLean's work into Irish at the time. Like Meg, I'll read the English first. A quick trip into Scraipadal for Meg Bateman. An eagle scanning for spoil accompanied us, circling high above the silent, ruined houses. That magical spring day when we walked to Scraipadal, tracking down Sorley's poem, while the shades of Tarmad and Achenmore stared across the sound to Cymric Marui. But today, no sleek black turret raised its ominous presence above the sea's shimmering surface, and no howling of a jet bomber drowned out the bleating of lambs or the piping of birds. As we proclaimed Sorley's poem aloud, Gaelic and Gaeilge, among the shells of houses. In the light of the castle disintegrating down the cliff, and a false church rock lying just offshore. In spite of headlines from the earth's four corners, the swagger of wealth and the pillage of the markets, in the light of inquisitive sheep climbing on walls, and benevolent sunshine on weeds and wasteland, in spite of false tales spread by narrators who tailor the news to the will of their masters, you could almost imagine rhyming a farewell to greed, to exploitation, to the frenzy for spoil. Of course, Sorley MacLean, very left-wing poet, and to my mind, by far the most significant Gaelic poet of the 20th century in Scotland or Ireland. Sciúrd Fhí Scraipadal, the Beg Bateman. Bhí fialar ar thóir creithe d'ar dúnluchan, ar falúin os cion bhothrach ciúin, an lá níomhrach airig sin gur siúlamar fadla Scraipadal ar lorab dán thóirle, agus scáilina harama disachan mhóir a breathnú nán ar Cymric Marui. Ach ní rárdig éan thoréad sleáin dubh éith hén go bagarthach trí chrithlinar na farige. Sníor bhaurig sianáil éan scard bhúmire mélig na nuam na pátarach na néan. Fad ienamar dán háirle a rec Gaelic agus Gaeilge ós ard imastihil bonha. Ivinishan tanachashlan hit le file. Agus carig na haglisha bregis scutcha umbalav. In anion the gown lintos na kerahorda, subtle rachmasori agus slad and varigig. Ivinishan agaira kadesha her ali. Agus failin a graine eali is her awesome. In anion vreig inchin na skelaha, a scapin skelta dreir tull na marsh tree. The viav naga gredfa, grev dera inan, dun tanked, dun chasar volug, agus dun grach. I'll read a poem. It's called Lauren on Chalach, or the Chalach Speaks. And the Chalach is something that's very common to Scotland and Ireland. You know, we often translate the Chalach Bear as the hag, you know, not a very good translation, you know, or an earth goddess, and the tradition, as I said, is very strong. Gerard O'Cruillach, now retired from UCC, wrote a wonderful book called The Book of the Chalach, which traces that. And one of the places Meg brought me to in the Isle of Skye was an archaeological site in the shadow of a mountain called Bain na Chalach, or Bain na Chalach, which in here would be Bian na Cali, and it was a cave which archaeologists as interpreting as having significance of the vagina of the Chalach and all sorts of fertility rites going on there. I think it's still being investigated. The Chalach speaks, and I imagine the Chalach speaking, and so many place names are being lost, you know, in English or in Irish, because of the type of farming there used to be that had an intimate relation with place is being replaced with sort of industrial farming. And it's not just the place names that are being lost, but that sort of relationship with the land, which now I think is a matter of planetary survival that we will need to re-establish. The Chalach speaks for Gerald O'Cruillach. Who is it I am, or what have I to relate these days? What divining verses to recite into the teeth of time? What song will be sung, what story told from now on, but the shadow of a story a raven would tell and a grey crow deny? The trace of a footstep about to be swallowed into the moss trembling on a bog surface. Ridges in a reverie of sweat and banter stirring themselves under forgetful bracken. An echo astray in the recesses of the mind, like an eagle's whistle in the beak of the wind. The clay is long hidden under heather, with no trace of foot or hand laid on it within a memory that barely lives. My wise ways no longer pulse up through vein and sinew to heart and marrow, to hearts that would recognize crags and moors or strange music pouring through gaps of wind. Each limb of my limb that was named for itself and for how it was known, the gully cutting deep in my side, that hollow there, the oaks huddled in its center, the jutting nose, the breast, the curve, the back, tableland, corrie, ravine, the spring over there with the rivulet that pipes out, playing crystal notes across the gentle moss, all their names lost in air and water. Now a restless silence is what I must divine. I was shoving in front of me. Well, agusan an don lagin veilge. Lauren an chaliach, de hero do cruelich. Cé mishe, cén scéal atá gomsa le hínsint ar na saolta seo, cén don le rec fasta mail na heimsire. Cén taurán a dearfar, cén scéal a in seofar orm sa machan seo, ach scéal scéal a din seoch fioch is a héanach fanóg. Lara cuis céime i mwael a flogha, sa gaian a crachach ar vár an vogig. Amirí, i dair of clitter is alish a sharafein fo yurutach rahnig. Macala ar fá na gulud na quina, mar a bheith fad fioler im nob na gwycha. Tan chre a michel a fada sa vreach, gan rian cosna liag a lá virha na quina liokalach na nina. Níl fys ma chod fasa cwyslw a nís, trí lw is trí ffeg os smyr ys go crí, crí a dachnio a craig agos cwair an, no ciol a dwyn trí fiarni gweithio. Gach bawl am chod bawl a anem niog, dar air a chlos a chlw chiart fein, an esh gydain im cleif an log sin hawl, an dyrin yn y lor, an tron, an chiach, an lwb, an chwyl, an fín, an cwm, an cymr, an fóran ŵd leis yng nglasin lle, a porteracht oig amach ar yng gwenach crin, a nanam nach a imiha le sra is le gwi, tost gan suan is a fasta bagan. I'll read a poem in English that has to do with Sorrel McClan and a mutual friend, a great friend and collaborator of Meg's called John Purser, wonderful musicologist of Irish descent, who lives in the Isle of Skye. Meg mentioned Elgal earlier. And it's called The Music Master and the Poet, and it's about a music master going across the island to the poet. The poet is, in fact, Sorley McLean. I don't mention them, and I hide the nature of the island. It's, in fact, the Isle of Skye, but I put a sort of false oriental gloss on it because I wanted to explore the idea of place and place names without it being applied to any particular place. But this is actually based on a story that John Purser himself told me about walking across the island to visit Sorley McLean, who was very old at the time, too old to go on mountains, and was anxious to find out exactly where John Purser had walked, what route he had taken, had he passed this place and that place. So it's an explanation of place and culture. The Music Master and the Poet for John Purser. I'm sorry, it's a little bit long, there are four parts. One. The Music Master laid aside his bamboo flute and wrapped his dulcimer with care in woven silk. He had been alone the winter long. It was time to cross the mountains east to where the poet lived on the other side of the island. He filled his satchel with the year's manuscripted music, remembering how the poet was pained by his own lack of song, reproached himself with not bearing the tradition borne by generations before him. Shaking his head and smiling, the music master put on his heaviest coat against the remains of winter. His footsteps notated a lively tune on the white page of last night's frost along his garden path. He latched the small gate, judging the high scudding clouds and the almost budding camellia sheltering under the north wall. Satisfied, he walked on past the lake. A heron rose in clumsy agitation from the reeds as he passed, straining its hunched head against the skinning wind before it curved easily down on outspread wings towards the far shore of the lake and settled again to fish in long-necked, wide-eyed concentration. Two. As it climbed steeply towards the bad step, the path sharpened, narrowed. The broad rhythm of his footsteps grew tentative, needing now and then the touch of hands on rocks that had steepened into walls held in ominous equilibrium by the sea. Winter, tired of itself, oozed from the rock, seeped through mosses, lichens. Grey stirred, barely he thought, but stirred towards green. Grey-green. He remembered that the old language knew no difference between the two, had seen midwinter light enough to recognize this viridescent tinge in springtime, to hear its hesitant notes. Had he caught it now? Could he now pipe the melody of snowdrops or play the drone of underground bulbs? Words tangled themselves around a dream of growth, untangled and sang themselves towards the daylight. He traversed the rock, hummed his way downward again. All day the music master trudged through the mountains, trying to note the true sequence of the high summits that sometimes muffle themselves in unyielding clouds. Three. The last light seeped downhill towards the sea, and the house at the edge of the sound. A gable window caught the light and gleamed. Under the window, the poet raised his head and listened, as it were, to the soft rays that slanted along his pen. He had heard the click of the garden gate, heard the pause, then footsteps crunching on the cinder path. He nodded at their remembered fluency. The friend's embrace flowed also into a surge of familiarities of health and work, of this and that song, book, recital, reading, review, then settled into silence. Mountains, valleys loomed unspoken between them, the poet remembering, the music master full of questions. Then the poet stretched to a high shelf, untied a ribboned parchment and unrolled it slowly and with ceremony across the floor. Four. Poet and music master knelt, bowed urgent, hieratic heads towards the map, illuminated by the small window on the western gable. Reveling in the map's tinted hatchings, in the old names inked properly in place, in the second sight of the cartographer, two hands, one lined with memories, the other elated with the day, both eager to record, trace the music master's path. Did you step, O finger stabbed, warily along the edge of wilderness, below the translucent blue summit and the two peaks of darkness? Did you hail those sad celestial mariners who bend their backs along the ridge of oars? Do they still strain hopelessly towards the sea? And did you walk the length of shellfish strand where women shimmering in low tide sunlight gather basketfuls of cockles and of gossip? Did the fanged crag of the executioner promise retribution if you approached? Did you dare the sacrilegious ascent to the unnameable summit? Was there a great shivering as you descended the hill of slaughter, a gasp of exhilaration when you finally breasted Earthwoman's Hill? Did you ford the stream of the red teeth, skirt buried rock, test the echo at Heather Cliff? Did the pool of white pebbles sing to you? Then, all at once, the music master's fingers walked the map alone. His friend's raised hand triangulated the air like the hand of a conductor, and the poet, who had said he had no music, was chanting his way right across the island, head lifted, eyes closed, in a canticle of love. For me, the matter.